He says, you are not allowed to call me father. You are an evil child. And I'm like, well, I can see why Zur is doing what he's doing, daddy.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Plus, also, I hate the word daddy.
Sorry.
No, it's not you. I used it first. I just don't like it.
Daddy.
No,
daddy, I
no.
want an empire, daddy. Daddy.
Straight down the rotten nut chute with you, Jen. Doesn't freaking matter. Right. All Centauri offers him is, it's gonna be a surprise. Mm-hmm. Except it's not. You guys, applauders, men, women, entities, persons whom I love, persons who I do not love yet. You do not get to say it's a surprise when it's a possible genocide.
Robert Preston, actor of Centauri, also says, sings. I'm not gonna tell you. This is the Music Man.
Remember? Not gonna tell you.
What? No!
They inserted a neener into this movie.
Let me out of your space horse. I don't want to go there.
Okay, so then he gets out and he's gone. And then it's Alex and he's like, And then this door opens up and you're like, ooh, legs. Ooh, torso. Ooh, boobs. Ooh, shoulders. And then you're like, ooh, ladies, lower face. And then Benjamin Franklin head.
So then
I instantly knew this was not a possible love interest. That's what I wrote. I said, bald, so not a love interest.
Right. So
prove me wrong.
The aliens that Alex is introduced to first are Rylians, I think is correct term, because the planet's name is Rylos. And they have these balding heads with like a patch of hair that goes around from the back to the front. This movie gives me so many Star Trek Next Generation vibes ruffles.
It's a fully grown out Picard.
Yeah. So Alex shows up and he's getting introduced to these aliens with bald heads and, you know, like full Picard, as Naomi said it. And but this lady, she's not speaking English and she's still trying to do the motions of like, come here, come here, come here. And he's just sort of like, what?
You know, space sign language, don't you?
Yeah, it's two
hands crossing each other and then like this weird kind of crossed, but like doing this weird dove motion.
Right. And so he's very confused, but he still kind of gets the gist of it. And
he's like, oh no, look at those. I keep calling them X-wings and I know I'm wrong.
Gun stars.
He's like, oh look, real gun stars. And she's like, rack-a-tack-a-tack. And he's like, yeah, no, like rack-a-tack-a-tack.
Yeah.
And follows her.
At one point he gets on this, it's like when you're in the airport and
it's
you have
a conveyor belt.
Conveyor belt. Thank you. Where he just stands on there and it starts moving and he's like, whoa. And he comes up to this guy who's like just done with his job. He's like so over it. And he just starts handing Alex a bunch of stuff. And then there's this other guy who's behind him and he just starts like, he makes this purring noise and then he looks like he's saying things angrily. And that's when we see Centauri again. And Alex is really like, how dare you not tell me about things? What's going on?
He gets a tag on his collar that translates anything spoken to him in English. Also, there's a weird cut to his brother, Lewis, who's like flipping through some Playboys and is like, where's the June episode? And he opens up and he's like, oh, yeah. And then Maggie walks into the room because who doesn't care about privacy and knocking? And is like,
they don't need privacy. They're in a small trailer park.
So like,
where's Alex?
Where's Alex? Thank you. And then and Lewis is like, he's been in bed all night moaning. And she's like, Alex, if you, she's twirling her weird pigtail braids. And she's like, something doobadoo. Sorry for slapping you, ba-doobadoo.
And no, she's like, I heard about the loan. I'm so sorry. And yeah, Alex,
that's
is
when
all
I
like,
realized yeah. it was a loan and yeah. not like a grant or a scholarship or an entrance.
Right. And he's just still moaning. This thing that's in his bed is still like moaning.
So she's like, just tell me if you need to talk about it. And she walks out and then like he pulls back the covers. And this is a beautiful, I will say, this is technical presentation. One of the greatest parts where he's like,
So the blanket pulls back,
yeah,
and we have this like a body horror moment with
Beta.
It's Beta. It's the thing that shocked Alex when he was in the Herstalorian. And he goes ahead and he's like, his face is like pulsating and it looks very robotic.
There's no nose holes. So as he breathes in and out, his entire skin from his like head to his upper torso just influxes with air and then exhales and like contorts to like this very bony, veiny structure. And it's beautifully done. Like, mm-hmm. In terms of, hey, Beta's assimilating to the meat data of who Alex is. Like, beautiful. It makes a lot of freaking sense.
Right. And there's also like the skin looks really pale and it's very slimy.
If you see the episode of Doctor Who where Matt Smith becomes a milkman. A man made of milk-ish.
Sure.
That's the episode that you would reference to make this make sense you'd watch this to make that episode make sense.
It's the inserted phase of Lilu in the generator that never got made.
High fives on that.
Okay, then.
Okay. So he got turned down for a loan. Milkman episode of Doctor Who. They cut to Alex walking through a lot of the set of the base in Rylos.
Sure.
And it looks like, and I know you love these references, but it is Men in Black episode set 1.0.
I know. So he's pretty much just walking around looking at all these different aliens and eventually I don't think he meets up with Centauri at this point, but he can understand everything that's over the intercom.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of aliens with a surplus of what I've referred to in my notes as a surplus of Benjamin Franklin wigs.
Yeah. But then in the main area around where all of these Benjamin Franklin wig looking aliens, there's this group of aliens that are all different. It's very diverse. And mm-hmm. it's very much pointing to the idea that they have been looking for starfighters in different galaxies amongst different species, I guess would be correct.
With the Excalibur test, not the starfighter test, which is what Alex passed.
Right.
Which should have been delivered to Las Vegas. Got sent to, what did Centauri call it? Like dust spit random trailer park garbage place?
Yeah, pretty much. But that was okay because it was Providence or fate or something like that. And so Alex grabs his gear and he takes a seat and he listens to the Emperor of Rylos kind of like talking about you are the starfighter program and you're here to help out in our fight against the bad guys, Zur. And I really did not take notes about the...
You don't have to because he gives this big emphatic speech and then he's like, he steps on like one guy's tentacle
as
he goes to sit down and there was like super much room. He did not need to step on that tentacle. He's like, sorry, I didn't mean to step on your... And then he says, the whatever that is, which I'm sure is super inclusive, but wouldn't the thing like translate it to be like, not just your tentacle, but that penis of yours that was on the ground or whatever, right? But then... After this big, emphatic, expansive speech by this Imperial guy, it ends with victory or death, victory or death, victory or death. And while they're chanting that, he's like, victory or death, and then he like sneaks away.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he bumps into
Grig. Grig. Thank you.
I did not know his name until the last 2/3 of the film.
Yeah.
But here's where my notes say, okay, and I'm sorry to every cisgender white man who all of the two of you who listen to this podcast, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry because this is the narrative, this hero arc that's been fed to you. And I'm sorry because one, you're better than that. Two, we already know that I think that if you're maintaining, you're doing a fantastic job. I went along a long time and Lydia tried to reel me in on it and could not because I think you're doing a great job. But here's the thing that I hate in movies, and it is written down thusly. This thing I hate that they do in movies and books and all the time is this mundane thing I do makes me the best ever.
Right.
Oh, did you play a video game real good? Great. Did you make a thing that worked real good? Great. Did you experience a thing that made you real good at whatever? Great. Honey, no. No, that's not. That's not how it works. Like, that's not how it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, played a video game real good before he almost, or maybe just made the age of 18. And now he's the best.
Doesn't this kind of speak to privilege where you can be like somewhat adequate in a field and then you end up kind of getting vaulted to a hierarchy in that field that maybe you weren't deserving of?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what that narrative always kind of speaks to me, is that this is how privilege looks like. You played a video game real well and you went ahead and put yourself up on Twitch. And because of the fact that there's a lot of people out there who have been forced into identifying with you through the media that they consume, through the people who lead our country, through the narrative of a certain group of people that has been fed to us in our own education, suddenly you're like 100 million subscribers on YouTube, or you just make a bunch of money on Twitch for doing nothing but playing a video game. Where's the, there really isn't any merit in that.
Here's the thing. If Charming got you money, I would have a lot more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not how it works. It's not. And that's where we're at. But a lot of white cis early teens to really at this point middle to late aged man have been fed this lie. And I've seen a lot of people crash and burn because it has not worked out for them. And I'm like, well, honey, you don't have that story arc. That's not how that works. Mm-hmm. You're extraordinary and extraordinary things happen. You're ordinary and maybe ordinary and very slightly extraordinary things happen to you. Or maybe you're just middle of the road, like the rest of us chickens trying to figure out which side we're going to land on.
Agreed. There's this aspect of luck that comes into play, but it's not just luck. I think it's also this, like, luck is part of it. And mm-hmm. I think it can be a big part of it. But there's also this aspect of it that is like, you fit a specific demographic that has always been elevated in our society. And because of the fact that this, don't mean to alienate people, but in my opinion, it's a cishet, straight white male that has a tendency to be elevated a lot higher when you actually look at the numbers. When you look at how many movies are created that have a cishet white male protagonist,
mm-hmm.
and they are always treated as being like, maybe they're not the greatest of people, maybe they're kind of fools, and yet they still succeed. And that is something, that is a narrative that has been fed. I mean, later on in this movie, Centauri talks about Christopher Columbus, and I'm like, you know, that guy doesn't actually have a great history, not just with Native people.
Yeah. Christopher Columbus was arguably a terrible garbage person, a rapist, racist, asshole, who never even made it to America. He was like, hey, Cuba's great, and then jetted off back to Spain, where he claimed lots of all the garbagey things he got promised. Like,
right. He was only elevated because someone really liked his narrative and was like, I'm going to promote the shit out of this guy.
Let me throw some money at that.
Yeah. It's just he was marketed really well in the late 1800s to early 1900s.
Good. Could you imagine? Could you imagine living in the United States of Columbus?
I don't want to imagine.
No. Yeah. That's why I'm super fine with that map maker putting his name on the map and was like, America.
But our capital is the District of Columbia.
Yeah, no, I don't like that. I don't like that since playing
BioShock Infinite.
Thank you. My God, I don't like Columbus because of BioShock. Like, not because I don't like BioShock. I love BioShock. I'm mad about like Columbus. Every time I hear that word, I'm like,
yeah,
gross.
What I do see is that it is not Excalibur that makes a man special, but the complexion of the hand that pulls Excalibur out. It is this idea that has been promoted through generations of what a real hero is.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that exemplified in this movie, unfortunately, too. But if you are a white cisgendered man, you have a specific destiny, and that destiny is to rule and to be the savior of all other people.
Right. And that is something that is very Eurocentric. And that is something that kind of feeds into Manifest Destiny, the idea that colonialism was not necessarily a bad thing, but it was. I want to be very clear. This is a podcast that believes that colonialism was inherently wrong.
Oh, every time I see somebody, a POC, whichever division of that, makes a colonizer post, if I wrinkle at all, I'm like, we're going to watch that like 2-3 more times. We're going to let that settle because you've been given a big old dose of colonizer and you have been like, manifest destiny into like believing things that are not true And it's terrifying because in the scope of this movie, like, they're like, hey, we're just protecting the peaceful planets. And I'm like,
but you said victory or death at the very end. That sounds like a fashy term.
Like, what is the other? What is? And Alex does not ever ask, what is the other perspective? Because, like, Nazis were like, you know, them Jews who be ruining the world, right? And so we gotta rule the world to get rid of them Jews. God, I hope that never gets clipped on the internet. But, like, the other side is like, they seem to be taking an innocent population who keeps mostly to themselves and is not proselytizing, but accepts anybody who comes to them. Like, well, maybe they're fine. Like, right. Look at the other side. Like, empathize. And this is why I couldn't get into debate in high school, by the way, because they were like, debate abortion. And I was like, abortion's wrong. And they're like, look at the other side. And I was like, no thanks. And now, as I am much more older, I'm like, I guess human life exists on both sides of the creation of and the endurance of. And, like, I have to put some freaking thought into it. And I would like to throw so much money at therapy. All that's to say, Alex does not look at the other side.
I would also say this about specifically, like, this is something that white men are inherited as, like, being leaders, being saviors. It has a lot of roots in white supremacy.
The white savior complex, specifically, maybe, if I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it time and time again. And I'm like, oh, no, Lydia, dear, gorgeous Lydia. This movie is full of non-human persons who could be allegoried. Madeline, please fix me on this, because I know I misuse the word allegory all the time. But, like, they come into this picture with all of these people who are non-human people. And then the white guy shows up and is like, I'll save you.
Yeah.
And then just white guys all over the shit. Oh, no.
And we really should reel it in, because this is a topic that we could talk about for, like, ages.
But guess what? Guess what? My notes are only, like, hold on. From here, I've only got 4 pages of notes.
Oh, me too.
Okay, good. We're gonna power through this, Jen. Yeah. You might be able to get through this in less than 5 weeks.
Right. So they just said victory or death, and then Alex goes ahead and stands up, and he, like, bumps into Gurg.
He stands into the wall. Gurg. No, here's the thing. And here's my storyline. Because I know you love it when I rate things wrong. Here's where he jumps into Friendly the Thing 1.0.
This is Grig.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Alex bumps into this alien who looks very reptilian, I guess is the best way to kind of, like, describe it on our Earth.
He looks a bit like the Goombas from Mario Brothers,
but movie. With better shaped heads.
His head is shaped like a turtle, which makes him better than the Goombas from Mario Brothers, the movie.
Right. And they get to talking, and it eventually comes out that Alex doesn't want to be here, and Centauri was the one who brought him here. And Grig calls Centauri out as he's like, so they, like, go over to Centauri, and he's, like, looking at these little pieces of money.
They look like D&D dice.
D4s.
Some of them look like D4s. Some of them are like, heavens. They're just random. Can I tell you a quick story about Abe?
Yes.
So I was trying to pick out dice at our local comic shop. And I was like, Abe, I need a set of dice for a game I'm playing this next weekend. And the font on this is really weird. Is this a 1 or is it a 7? I can't really tell on this. And he goes, Abraham looks at me, he goes, it's probably a 1 because it's a D6 and it doesn't go to 7. Abraham rules my life. That's great. Even care. That's the greatest thing.
I feel like a 7 on a D6 side of die sometimes.
All right. So then we go to a cut screen that's like, the
not just yet, this is when we learn about the Excalibur test, how Centauri pretty much was like...
Ominous win number 2.
I do have a Sean fact to insert here, too.
Oh my gosh, there's so many things going on right now. I feel like I'm in an ominous wind.
When Alex meets Grig for the first time, we see Grig adjusting a device with rotating red beams. Does this sound familiar to you?
It's like long beams in a circle, and it's like... Mum, 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 mum.
Yeah, that prop is actually a mainstay of engineering sets, most notably seen in Airplane 2, the sequel. There you go.
Awesome. That is a thing I didn't know, and I don't think I'll ever need, but so, I like it.
So running through all of this stuff, Alex is like, oh, I was recruited by Centauri. And Grig's like, oh, Centauri, that shifter. And so they go over and they find him, and he's like counting money because he like won a bet with the other alien, the one who was like, who purred at the first time he saw Alex. And so Grig is giving Centauri a mouthful because of the fact that, one, Earth is not actually viable for starfighter candidates. And two, he didn't actually like...
he didn't pass the test.
He didn't pass the Excalibur test.
But so, I spent so much money and time putting in these video games and marketing and before Christmas and then
and that's what Centauri says, and he's like, technically it wasn't the Excalibur test, it was the Starfighter test. And then Grig's like, do you know that he doesn't want to be here? And Centauri's like, you are missing out on an opportunity. Are you a coward? You know, it's this
mysterious wind.
Yeah, and that's when the mysterious wind comes in, and we see like all of these light particles kind of form together to create like giant head a la Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, but also it's above the room that they walked past when they were touring, which I called, I don't know if I said this out loud, so Jen, sorry, but like Men in Black set 1.0.
Yeah.
Picard Academy.
What?
Where you too can learn to be a Picard.
Are you going to pass the Kobayashi Maru?
No, because that's Kirk.
That's everyone who goes through the academy, Jen.
Okay. Light particles come together and they form this face, and it is Xur. Xur? X-U-R.
Xur it is.
So this is the main villain of the movie, and he's all like snippy and campy.
It's our second film, at least, where our main battler never meets nor contends directly with our protagonist.
Right. What was the first one?
Fifth Element? Yeah.
Oh, like, okay. Because, they technically meet at the very end after O-Face.
Corbin never meets... What's his face?
Oh, Zorg.
Zorg and Corbin. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking Alex never meets Zur.
Yeah, which is a shame.
That would have been fun. I was waiting for the fisticuffs. Yeah. No lie. I was like, I want them to fight each other, and I want that scepter to come in. And it never happened, and I wasn't sad about it, but I kind of wanted it to happen.
Right. So that's when we find out that Xur is the main villain. He's trying to take over Rylos.
How could you do this? My villainous, terrible son, bastard dude, never had a lady. You never... I'm going to say all evil things about you. You're probably still a virgin, and I think you dress bad, and that weird metal thing doesn't suit our culture, and I know I look like KFC daddy who's been warmed over twice.
The emperor calls this kid, he says, you are not allowed to call me father, you are an evil child. And I'm like, well, I can see why Xur is doing what he's doing, daddy.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah,
plus also I hate the word daddy.
Sorry.
No, it's not you, I used it first, I just don't like it.
Daddy, I want an empire, daddy.
Straight down the rotten nut shoot with you, Jen.
Right. Also, at the end of that scene, you see the leader like walk off set. And I'm like, did he just flee the scene of battle? Because Xur was like, you have until this end thing. And
he does not come back until the second to the last scene.
I know. So I'm just saying, like, he knew that his son was dangerous and he picked up and he left, leaving people to possibly die.
Yoink. So then... he dissipates into weird cloud gas that I assume only the people in the room got to inhale.
Mm-hmm.
And then the screen flashes to...
We do, actually, before he leaves, we do see...
I tried that three times. I'm so sorry.
We see him, like, destroy a spy.
He melts a guy's face and he looks like someone I know. And I cannot friggin'... I looked at the credits and I couldn't figure out who he is, but I swear to you, that character actor, I know who he is. I just can't think of who.
Right.
Who?
But the way he dies is very Raiders of the Lost Ark.
His face melts. And I was like, yum. Melty guy is what my notes say.
And Alex just nopes right out there.
He nopes back to, he goes with, he's like, hey, Centauri, bad choice. Take me home.
Right.
And he gets off station, which is great because then we cut to, and now I'm actually correct, the screen flashes the frontier.
Right. And there's all these like little probes all in a straight grid.
Yeah,
and
what's up with being in space and having grids.
It's probably an electric field where you don't actually see the electricity. So then we cut to the frontier, and there's like all of these like probes in this nice grid like structure.
I was like, you know, they're the evil guys because the color scheme is black and red.
Yeah. And so we go inside. There's a ship on the outside on one side of these probes, and we go into it, and we see these like funky looking aliens. And one of them is the guy who we just saw with his floating head.
Yeah, okay, so he's the weird Benjamin Franklin-looking mutated, like, molten hair dude, but all the dudes around him look like, and let's go back, to the wood people. They look like wood, of the Christopher Eccleston, is that right? The Eccleston episodes of Doctor Who.
Okay.
Remember that?
Remember the end of the world scene where...
Let's go back to our Agent Hem of the world. And the taste of your lips is toxic. Your toxic tongue tasting under.
I do not remember that episode of Doctor Who.
It's an Eccleston episode. Okay. It's probably the best one.
Okay.
He finally gets Rose and they go up to watch the end of the world.
Okay.
And there's this fabulous woman of color in all of this makeup of her being like a wooded...
She's a tree person.
Yeah, she's the evolution of trees on Earth.
Nice.
Yeah, and he's like, she's like, what's your present for being on my planet? And he's like, my breath from my lungs to yours. And she's like... Oh my God.
I do remember that part.
Yeah.
I do remember that part.
It's really a good part. Yeah. Like, I didn't, like, that's top Eccleston for me.
Yeah. But that's not who we're dealing with here. Here we're dealing with Xur and.
Xur, you.
Androns, something like that. Sean can correct me in this month's episode of Shock Talk. But basically, Xur is like this disenfranchised, privileged kid who ultimately...
The son of Space Colonel Sanders.
Son of Space Emperor. He's a space prince. And so he's getting all angry over the fact that he, had to be told no at one point, I'm assuming. And he decided to go ahead and take over everything because his dad was like, you are an evil child.
His space life never took off. His space Twitch never caught traction. He never got the kind of propriety he wanted. And so he needed to join the opposite union of his he was like, I'm gonna be a confeder universe guy and you could be all universe guys. And you imagine he's the a very specific kind of douchebag.
And when they make the sequel, they need to make Andy Sandberg portray that character.
I'm 100% behind that. That is a good idea.
So also this character is like, I'm the one who's in charge. This scene starts out with one of his underlings bringing him a scepter. And this scepter is like this, for anybody who's played Skyrim and has specifically done the, I feel like I'm going to completely butcher this name, Molag Bal quest. It's where you go into like this house in... Not Markarth. It's Markarth. Where you have to like go down into the depths of this house, and then you have to like pretty much go on a quest to retrieve this gnarly looking like metal mace, and it's got all these spikes on it. Like, here is the description of the scepter. It's about
in Skyrim?
Not in Skyrim. This is the description of the scepter in the movie that reminds me a lot of the mace in Skyrim.
Do it.
So it's about 3 feet long. It's silver with spikes at the end where the spikes take on this, where the spikes on the side take on this very fin-like design where, you know, you have like you have the spike. If you've ever seen like a fish... And you know how their fin kind of like...
Like a spine. The way that a fish spine comes up and it's got the membrane behind it.
Right.
And it like just... It's very jagged.
Right. Also, when Xur presses a button at the top, there's an extension of another foot that's like a spike or a knife.
I love that so much.
I wrote in my note Chekhov's knife because there was so much emphasis on it that I thought it was going to come back.
They had to have spent, no lie... thousands and thousands of dollars on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that my notes say about this scepter is, do want that scepter as much as I want the micro knife, which is a microphone knife from Phantom of the Paradise. I want them both.
Yes.
I demand them both. No, I will never be famous enough to have them both, but I want them both. Please, thank you very much, and good night.
You're welcome. So in this scene, there's a lot of like exposition about, you know, like
It doesn't really matter. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to kill these guys. We don't kill these guys. These guys have a, we need to fire on these guys approaching the border, right?
So
the guy's like, we need to fire on these guys approaching on the border. And he's like, you can't say fire. Only I can say fire. I'm in charge. And the guy's like, okay. And he's like, okay, so fire.
My note was, how to make a campy villain even campier. You're not allowed to say fire. Only I am allowed to say fire. Fire.
It's the worst and so dumb and I hate him, but I love him so much because he like
Alex, he's what did you say about a few tubes short of a television?
he's a few pixels short of a broken projector for sure. He's like, what movie did we cover that was like, he has such conviction of his actions that if you saw it in a stage production, you would be like, this is amazing. He's a great guy. It was from Santa Claus versus the Martian.
It was the bad guy from that movie, right?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was the, his name was like Mando or like Ghostine. Oh, you know how I love to make it Martian.
Valdar?
Voldy. We called him Voldy. He was like such a great stage actor in a movie and he was just like, no, I hate you. No, I hate you with all of my conviction. And you're like, oh, honey, no. You're just being a dick. And he's like, my scepter, I only get to say fire. Fire?
Right.
I can't wait till he disappears. He's going to disappear soon, guys.
I'm assuming that the frontier is this energy field because they like do the circly thing to open up a breach.
Uh-huh.
And then they do bloop, bloop, bloop.
Okay. But here's where my notes say, oh, no. And Jen, you can edit in that TikTok noise that's like, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Or just leave that in because that's charming.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Alex's cowardice is the only thing that saves us all. Not only is he only good because he can pew 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 on a video game, but he also, his cowardice is what saves it. He's like, get me out of here. And they're like, okay, because you didn't actually sign up for it. And then he's like, good, I'm home. But then it's like, but we need you.
Right. So these three like particle beams just go shooting through the frontier and they're aiming for the base.
Yeah. But then Jen made an amazing, what I assume to be amazing because my ignorance is vast. Jen, what's your video game reference for when they start to blow up the ship just now?
If they had only brought in somebody that had practiced missile command, they would have been successful at defending the base.
It's beautiful.
I'm going to give you a high five on that one. Okay, so please notice they start evacuating the base because has got real. Some child might say, what the sh-?
They also like aim the cannons up so they can go ahead and fire, and they fire one. But then this guy comes by and he like puts some explosive next to where those are getting controlled.
Even in 1984, don't plastic explosives look like plastic explosives?
Oh, yeah.
They're just like, it's this muddy gray color in there. He's like, and then he pushes a button and it starts beeping and we never see that guy ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know at this point that both sides have spies.
Yeah, right. Of course you would. Plus also, who are the Nazis and who are the not Nazis?
That's too deep of a question for this movie.
I really think so. Okay. Right.
And so plastic explosions go off and the cannons go...
Yeah, they really do like the sad face, right. Wally version of like... Yeah. Okay, so then we cut back to Earth and then... Okay, so... Centauri's gonna drive Alex home, but his car breaks down. But like, is that real or is it not? But Alex is like, it's only a couple miles. I'm gonna go. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna walk through the desert alone in the middle of the day. And Centauri's like, no, take my communo crystals. And Jen, what do the communo crystals look like?
They look like an Apple Watch.
They look exactly like an Apple Watch. Okay, so I got one for my birthday, and I'm not trying to be bougie, but, like, the stupid red square with, like, beepity boops in it? Like, tell me that doesn't look like that doesn't look exactly like that. Tell me it doesn't, because you'd be a liar.
It does.
It really fudging do. Okay, so take them with me. He goes to throw them back. He's like, no, I don't want to. And he's like, no, keep them with you. You're a stupid douchebag. And he's right.
Yeah.
He needs to keep them with him. Although I don't, even on the second viewing, remember him ever pulling out the communo crystals and hitting the buttons.
And this is the moment where Centauri brings up like Christopher Columbus and the Wright brothers as like, you could be a part of history.
The joke was really great because he's also, and here's the thing, you'll have to watch the movie because I did not write down what he said, but he's right. Like, you remember the group of whoops who did the pwa pwa pwa? And he's like, the group of groups? And he's like, ah!
Yeah.
And like walks away because he don't know.
Even though they were ugly is a point that he made.
Right.
Even though those people were saved and they were ugly, they were still saved.
I say let the ugly people die.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
That's for you. And that's for you, Sean. It's for you.
So Alex gets back home and he sees Maggie kind of like pacing around and he goes over to her and she just sort of like she slaps him.
Yeah, I've never felt anything more. And then she's like, my sexual deviance.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, what are you talking about? And she walks away and then he has to go into his trailer.
Right.
And then he's like, he looks at his brother in a way that's very gross.
By the time he gets back there, it's night, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, so and his brother's sleeping in his bed, and that's why it's gross.
Because who gazes upon their sibling and is like, oh, yes, my sibling.
Right.
I wouldn't. The only time, okay, I will say that I have gazed upon my sibling while they were sleeping, and that's only because my sibling sometimes sleeps with their eyes open. And I was like, are you sleeping? And I stared real hard, and I was like, you're asleep right now.
Generally, if you're gazing at your sibling while they're asleep, you're plotting something.
Less my experience, but I appreciate yours. Mine was like, is my sibling messing with me? And they were not.
Yeah.
Is the bunk bed shaking? Okay, I think I know what my sibling's up to right now.
So Alex, you know, after looking at his sibling in a weird manner, he goes and sits on his bed and he hears some like grumbling coming from the bed and he like is startled and he gets up. And that's when we see the figure on the bed pull back the sheets and it's
the arguably more charming beta as Alex.
Agreed. This is what the beta unit was doing. It was shocking him so he could take his genetic code and make himself look like him and sound like him and everything. And Alex has this whole like dialogue scene with beta.
Yes, it's himself. It's split screen or back and forth. It is well super freaking done as a judgmental jerk of a person who does nothing but like parent trap it and being like, yeah, I see what you did there. They did an excellent job with this. The few times they do it in the film, they jump back and forth either solidly in a cinematically acceptable way, or they split screen it in a way and with a character who knows the dimensions of that dynamic in a way that's very charming.
I do have some Sean facts about Beta Alex, who I will also refer to as Beta Max, just
why?
For references.
But also awesome.
So, shocking fact number one, there were test audiences for this movie.
No, in 84?
And shocking fact number two, Beta Alex tested really high.
Agreed. Oh, agreed.
We haven't gotten to our shocked and applaud moments yet, Jen.
So they're like, okay, how can we include more of Beta Alex? So they filmed some more scenes, but the problem was the actor playing Alex had gotten real sick and he had cut his hair. So they ended up putting a wig.
I saw the wig. It's been in a couple scenes, yeah?
They put a wig on him and they smudged him so much with makeup. Remember I was telling you there's something really off about his makeup in these scenes.
Yeah. Especially in the teenage-y scenes.
It wasn't because they're like, okay, so this is like an android sort of clone deal, so we need to make him look a little bit off. No, it was because the actor was really sick.
What kind of sick? They have cancer.
No, he just contracted an illness during reshoots.
Okay. No shade. I wasn't trying to be snoopy. I just thought if they put it out there, I would know.
But Betalix. He is probably like the funnest part of these scenes, because there's this back and forth, and Alex kind of confronts him about, you know, everything that that Maggie slapped him and everything. And
she stuck her tongue in my ear, and what was I supposed to do? I screamed and ran away. And he was like, he didn't say what I might have said, because I'm used to explaining social situations. He didn't say, hey, that's a sexy thing we do sometimes. He was like, how dare you? I can't believe it. Get out of here. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. At this point, he's like, I'm going to get Centauri to come and pick up his toaster or something like that. And Lewis wakes up and Alex says, go back to sleep, Lewis, or I'm telling mom about your Playboys. And then Lewis just jets right back into sleep.
So
and he starts snoring loudly.
Yeah. So then he's like, they back and forth. Alex and Beta are back and forth. And then Alex leaves. And then Lewis is like, hey, I thought you never. And then Beta was like, I thought I told you to go to sleep unless I tell your mom about our mom about your Playboys. And he's like, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is the moment where Lewis is like, hey, I thought you were, like, he's about to say, hey, I thought you just left, but he didn't. And so it's like, I could have done with an entire movie that was between Beta and Lewis.
Okay, so now there's a drifter who gets dropped off by a truck in the middle of nowhere, and the middle of nowhere happens to be the Starlight Star Bright.
Mm-hmm.
And my notes, as I didn't know what was going on, was like, Starlight? Star Bright? Drifter or evil? ... Evil. But also, might have missed the part where Lewis was like, what the sh-?
Oh, that's right. It's when he, like, pops his head down and he sees Beta in the bed.
He's still in the bed when Alex has left. And he's like, what the I thought you were going to go. I told you mom was going to say. And
he's like,
what the And then he's like, I told you I was going to tell mom about your Playboys. And then he, like, goes, he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. So sorry, gonna sleep right now.
Right. So when the assassin comes over to the Starfighter arcade, it starts kind of like flashing, and then we see like the visage on this wanderer.
Yeah, yeah. And what happens is the video game changes the assassins who flock like moths to a flame to a person who's as wanted as the last Starfighter. And it transforms them to their original form, which is like the weird bug-eyed goldfish that you should not buy because they're weirdly deformed. Their eyeballs are above their mouths, and they apparently have a very strange smell. And I do not 100% nor 0%. There is no percent. I don't know what they're called.
Feeder fish?
Yeah, no. Not the bubble guppies.
Okay.
Or the bubble goldfish or whatever they're actually called. But these specific aliens.
Oh, yeah. They're like Zardons or something.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because they're only there for murder porn.
Right. And then we just kind of see like his form drop from human to alien. And then Alex. No, he doesn't. He doesn't meet up with Maggie, but he's looking for Maggie. And he comes over to the arcade. And he's, like, looking at the arcade and everything.
The arcade is one game.
It's one game, yeah. But then there's, like, things that drop on him. And he looks up, and the assassin's up there. And he's, like, you know, trying to fire at him. And this is when we get the shootout of the assassin, you know, going after Alex.
And then the DeLorean pulls up. And my notes actually say this guy puts the ass in assassin. There you go. That's good comedy right there. Okay, so then Centauri pulls up and Alex is like, hey, watch out. And he gets shot out. There's a shootout. Right. Centauri shoots off his arm, the assassin's arm.
Yeah, before that happens, Beta shows up and he gets shot at, but he doesn't get hit.
Yeah, he hides behind the game a bit. And that's important for him, I suppose, to recognize that there's a whole lot going on. He's up to speed, I guess, in terms of like the importance of the person he's portraying.
Right. But it's also important because like Beta, like at the end of the scene, there's a lot of talk about like why Alex should go back and everything. At one point, Centauri refers to the assassin as like a dirty beast. And I'm like, look, guy, this is a being that is capable of, you know, identifying and trying to assassinate someone correctly. Maybe don't be a space bigot.
I aspire to not be a space bigot.
Oh, and this is also the time when Centauri says, you can bet your asteroids.
Mm.
Yeah. But
also Centauri, when the guy falls, he gets a shot in the gut, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
And then he shoots the assassin. The assassin falls. He melts into the ground, which is like amazing because who doesn't want to melt a guy if you have the ability? Mm-hmm. And then Alex and Beta become best buds, maybe? Like, I've never watched the movie Step Brothers, but I do know the meme where they're like, did we just become best friends?
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel that with both of you in the room, right? Like, I know you. You know me. You know what I would do in this moment. So, Alex, you go off with Centauri. I'm going to be here and I'm going to take care of stuff.
Yeah. And this is also the moment where Beta is informed that he's supposed to be there specifically as a decoy. And, like, he's already kind of not liking Alex's life and everything. He's like, oh, I'm stuck with your life, that sort of thing.
I would sign up and sign off on so much of my life to have Alex's life.
Mm-hmm.
Alex.
So at this point, they get back into the car and they're heading back to Starfighter Base. And Centauri, you see him like kind of holding the wound in his stomach. And as he's making the phone call to the Starfighter Base, you can actually see, like, you know, alien blood on his hands.
It's green black. It's super gross.
Yeah.
So he ends up landing, but like he lands bad and then he can't break.
Before he lands, like as soon as it comes back into view, I was like, oh no, part of the base got deleted because like it's bad CG. And so like the middle has just been like,
it's not jagged. It's yeah. not jagged. They just cut out a block of right. vision.
Yeah,
it's bad. And like I have known some people who did like skins for Doom and stuff that my friends have made have been fairly rudimentary. In my understanding, like I know it took a lot of time, and this was also more than 2 decades ago. So I just wonder why they didn't have that in 84 and they just kind of blocked it out with black. Yeah. They were like, oh no, it's been destroyed. We'll just control alt delete this and just leave it matte black.
I went to school for computer animation for a little while, and during that time, they didn't have a concept of being able to skin the flat area that you're trying to shape. So at that point, you really just had the ability to draw polygons and then to color those with different, very rudimentary surface textures. So it wasn't the idea that you were placing an image on top of that texture. So you weren't like drawing on top of the flat surface to make it look like it was bumpy or something like that. It was just the ability for you to have like sort of a shiny thing where it would reflect off of a light surface or something like that. Anyways, you could do this a lot better on a home computer now.
Oh, so my last thought about this, and I think a good leaving off point is before part 227 of this episode 24, is that dude has been shot. He looks at the blood that is black and green on his fingers, and he brings himself in to the station at Rylos. He can't control, he's blacking out because he's bleeding out, right? And he's pulling into the station. In fact, Alex's hand pulls down the partition between the front back seats, and he manages to steer the car away from the person guiding him in, and he is called over by Grig, and he climbs out of the car, and he goes alongside Grig, mm-hmm. and he's like, hey, man, how you doing? We're going to get you help. It's going to be fine. And Grig is like, hey, we've got so much money for you. And for Alex's credit, Alex is like, yeah, man, we're going to like, you got like so much money. You got so many piles of money right now. He picks up on what Grig was saying. It was like, you're going to die. So we're going to tell you all the awesome things. And I'm 100% behind that. Jen knows that she's allowed to lie to me on like two or three circumstances. Like, do I look good in this? Where do you want to eat? And how's my death going? You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not afraid of this. And so here's what Centauri says. Did you write it down? I wrote it mostly down because of who I am as a person. He goes, and this will go back. Hey, applauders, if you want to go back to our Hot Fuzz episode. Feel free mm-hmm. to skip back to that right now. But here's what Centauri says to Alex before he whoosh, whoosh, dies. I brought you back for the greatest good, but it never hurts to be rich.
And that's when Greg closes Centauri's eyes and says that he's passed on to the next dimension.
Yeah.
Closing the fake eyes, by the way. These are not real eyes.
He's got his fake face on.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Dying with a fake face
Why?
On.
You've completed part two of our review of 1984's The Last Starfighter, A Plotter. We still have a bit more plot to share until we reveal our shocked and applaudable moments, and can't wait to share even more side banter and laughter along the way. Want a bit more movie talk to tide you over until next week? Your next favorite movie recently joined up with Mystery Mike from Hush Hush Society to discuss another 80s classic, The Lost Boys. And Shoot the Flick breaks the rules with a new talk about Fight Club. Check out this episode's description for links to these great shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and humble Twitch star turned Rogue One pilot, Jen. Do you feel like it's your personal mission to boost and hype the creators that you love and follow? Well, that's the kind of crazy we need at Shocked and Applaud. By leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.com, you can help to boost our name in search results for others to more easily find us. We'll even read your review on a future episode of Shock Talk. We have at least one more part left to this episode, and hope you'll join us next week. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.